problem, one of the problems with bond rates is there is no lost funding in a bond rate. It's less than a bond rate in a nationwide is based on cost, pure cost. There is no reserve pool of money to pay loss. So the surety has a loss that can go to that. So surety do not have that. Losses in insurance are caused by the accident of running someone's car. The insurance company, or the underwriter, puts up his money to pay your bill. This is not the case in bonds. There is no loss. The surety has the absolute right to anything you own, anything your corporation owns, anything you write on your affairs. So they cannot have equal rights to a pool of money to pay loss. If they suffer a loss, they then recover against the person whom they guarantee. This is the same thing that banks do with corporations, or when you take out a Bank of America card, or when you buy a piece of furniture, here's the rule. You sign on a contract that here's the rule about whomever they come into your home, whoever, and pick up that item for any like quantity of that. So we're talking about credit, not insurance. Capital in the United States, which we're all very limited, particularly in the insurance industry, and insurance underwriters write capital. Alaska limits are higher than the bond funds in real estate industry. The contract is life insurance is very Alaska, almost double in real estate. General contract of life is bond is $5,000. Specialty contract of life is bond is $2,000. Compared to Washington, which is $3,000, which is $3,000, Hawaii, which is $3,000. The last contract of life is in front of probably the least expensive. With sufficient capital, 2 years ago, I could have got $2,000 contract of life. Exposures in Alaska are very high. Costs are high, union demands are high, quantities of materials are scarce, and we brought up from the we have to pay the freight, labor, that's the only issue. So when money is tight and costs are high, money goes to costs are low. So in the past 2 years, we've seen a retreat from the bonding market of such firms as Maryland Casualty, Balboa Insurance, National Accident Indemnity, Marine Bonding, United States Fidelity and Guarantee, the Argonauts Company, Hartford, etc. This is not anything to say against them. It's saying that they're going where they can make money. Now, we tried the Japanese Argonauts, the Indian contract, London and the United States, the same bonding market. We're going outside of the next contract, we're going to drop in 30 days and down. Not going to fly. Seattle is not close to it. Over the past years, I've seen strange things in bonding. One time I got a check for $50 million in cash. It's a bunch of commitment. They have no skill. Bonding is purely subjective. There is no right to bonding. There is no magic formula. The underwriter puts the cross the table to you. You open your account up to this, your client is in the dealing, and you try to sell the underwriter the idea that this is good for our experience, trustworthy, good track record, and the surety that he doesn't like the way you come to your next title, that particular day, may simply come. It's really like a fishman. Those contractors in Alaska today who have no bonding problems of their own, they will soon have problems with their subcontractors because their subcontractors, beginning contractors, small contractors, doing 5, 15, 25,000 jobs, are not going to be able to get contractor licenses. So they're going to be ponying up various incentive concepts and ideas, and the sub is not going to be properly registered. There are two forces currently active in the United States. those who don't have bonds want to have them. The solution, as I see it, is first of all, accept indemnity pledges from non-surety brokers to offset bonds. Currently, the Treasury Department, for example, you cannot issue bonds to the federal government unless the surety is on the public list. No matter what you do, given the time to be prepared, given cash, they simply cannot accept. They must have bonds managed for 25 days by a recognized contractor or direct surety and their respective surety. So I suggest instead that you might consider accepting the state indemnity pledge from non-surety sources in lieu of the bond. I suggest that we might lower requirements for farming to keep it more in tune with national, but increase contractor restrictions. The Home Builders Association has long been an advocate of contractors' licensing boards and the degree of licensing qualifications. I personally think it's ludicrous. I believe contractors must prepare themselves and their records for complete examination and pre-qualification. Countless times contractors have done this themselves and colleagues walk in and say, well, these contractors have done this. They say, well, okay. And give them a stack of paperwork that we are required to fill out to them to ensure. In-depth analysis of the past 3 years of financial involvement, their cash flow, their structure, their assets, the total income of the contract, whether the contract becomes qualified or is not qualified. We must take it from the staff to get the revenue from capital accounts. Those who are recognized as any bonding broker, surety agent, here on the record, tell us to read what line of credit can I get. One possible solution might be to eliminate commissions and instead substitute a fee. The bonding commissions in today's insurance market are the highest paid commission included for the insurance agent. And yet the workload is the highest paid workload in places to do. Therefore, the commission is not going to be. Unfortunately, the commissions earned by the agent do not even near people to work. The financial involvement, completing investigations, the bank investigations, gaining letters of credit, examining all of the prior references, these things must be done before assuring them that. Then possibly, you might be more inclined to work harder to get bonds signed. But in turn, the last statute is strictly waived the only charge the commission receives from the surety that we can meet. Any other fee is contrary to law. For small contractors and small operations, it is strictly the concept about investment income, particularly the surety business. Investment income is less than 2 to 3% of the total net. 8 o'clock. All the problems is contracted licensing board, lower requirements for bonding, and stiffer requirements for contracted licensing, and inspection regulations.
My name is Jim Walker. I'm president of Circle Combustion. It's more of a problem than any general contractor. Circle Combustion is a specialty contracting company. It's limited to two endeavors of work. And we more or less live off of what some people call dog meat, $10,000 to $25,000 jobs. These jobs require bonding. Bonding is available. You're going to have to be patching up with some people considered dog money. 5 years ago, it was a phone call to get the ball rolling and get a bond of any size. In my realm, $250,000. Progressively, it's been getting more difficult with the increased net worth requirement that the bonding companies require. Every time I get up to one plateau, the plateau keeps rising. And I never seem to catch up with it. CDs, as was pointed out before, could be held up in, held up for approximately 7 years. That's the limitation. And private indemnity. Part of the theory of starting a corporation is to limit the liabilities of the corporation to its assets. If something does go wrong, pressure boiler repair, pressure vessel repair. It entails boiler repair and welding. Years ago it was 80%, and today it's 20%. Can't get time. Just recently, at last resort, and some of my better leads turned out that they couldn't make finding either. This is most recent. All the finding companies are going down the road. There's none left in Alaska. For a BIA job, I didn't incorporate a large margin of profit in it. I was preparing approximately in the vicinity of $1,200 net profit. I was required on this job to get bonding in excess of $10,000. It was an emergency boiler job. I pointed this out to the state people I like to work for, and because of the bureaucracy and really what they have to do. I found that most of the bigger contractors that I work for, or the oil companies, or the BLM, BIA, Indian Affairs, are doing it themselves. It's a trial and error basis where they get these specialized tools and try to do the work themselves, and sometimes they do it, sometimes they don't. And when they don't, they seek outside help.
Many states have a preference by wherein the government is bound to take the product manufactured within that state that falls under 30%. I'm just wondering if maybe something along those lines. would be given to, or special consideration would be given to local contractors if their bid falls within a certain percentage of whatever the low bid is, and if they do otherwise meet whatever requirements it is. They would be working on the job and the contract to be held out by the local contractor. I've never heard of any contract in the state supported the job by a local contractor.
normally, no, well, yes, but from a practical point, no. Normally, by the time these large awards come down, the contractor is gone, or financially gone. And this, to be honest, is no one. And so they say, this man wants so much. If you can go in and get all, if they don't treat it as an insurance, you know, no fault insurance, that's what they're really complaining about. If they say everybody gets to tell the facts and stuff, then that's the insurance. And this is still going on, but we at one time thought that we didn't think we owed all the money, but we thought we owed a great deal of it. That money was then put into court, and we found ourselves at this point paying double, not only the money that we paid in, but they said, well, since you paid us in, you must be liable for it. And unbelievable, we had a judgment. But we're still litigating whether we own the rest of it or not, and the contractor may own the rest. I don't know. Some of the things are hard. If you could get these, maybe if you could get them heard fast and quick before a board or something that was knowledgeable within the construction field, it would be easier on the contractor.
Do you think the
charities
would go to buy
an arbitration? Your bonding arbitration, you get it done fast and get down to the contractor's problems of really what went wrong in the job and what the problem was, why the contractor went under, rather than you went under now pay. They would probably go for binding arbitration or something that would be fast and quick. It doesn't do the contractor either one, you get to go through 3 or 4 years of litigation. Enough law business there.
I'm Marsha Martin again. You're just mentioning contractors going, as you said, belly up, and you mentioned maybe they should be the ones that didn't get business license, or maybe that's why it should be, everybody's been talking about tests for general contractor's license. Just because a contractor goes broke or has problems on a job does not mean that he's not performing. it could be that the people aren't paying him, and so he can't pay his bill. A lot of good people in Alaska have gone broke because of that. And this is why everybody's saying, and you were saying, go get a larger contractor that can get bonding. Now, I don't think that's a very good idea, because naturally they have more money than you do. They have more power than you do. They can keep you right under your thumb, and they don't have to give you a dime if they don't want to. So I think that's the worst idea I ever heard.
My name is Lawrence Smith, and I own the Better Business Maintenance Company. I've been in Alaska 2.5 years, and I've been in business for myself 1 year. I simply do janitorial custodial service work. I am very small, and I can't get bond, period. I have a $2,000 personal bond for a specialty license. I'm insured and all that. I didn't realize I'd have any trouble until this summer when I started bidding on jobs, mainly in the municipality of Anchorage, cleaning their office buildings. The first bid that went up was in May, you don't have to get now when. It was about $85,000 contract. Well, you had to have a 10% performance bond to put down right then and there at the drawing of the contract. Well, 10% of $85,000, a small man like myself, just don't have it. The person that got the job, he had to go out hot, beg, ball to the hilt to get that job. I bidded on 2 more jobs, which was still above my capabilities. I finally was able to receive the smallest bid for the smallest job, which was $28,000. I had to give the municipality of Anchorage $5,800 cash for them to keep 18 months, because the contract is for 18 months. So they'll keep that $5,800 for 18 months. When the contract is finished, then they'll give me my money back without interest, which to a small man, $5,800 is a lot of money to be tied up for the municipality of Anchorage to keep, which I will never see, for 18 months. I bidded on the Alaskan Railroad custodial job. They did not require a bond. At that bidding, 14 janitorial service contractors showed up. For the municipality of Anchorage, which requires a bidding of a bonding, only 3 of us showed up. And at the last contract, at the last bidding, I was the only one who showed up, because no one else could afford it. So, of course, I was the only one to, I was a low man anyways, but I was the only one to bid on it, you know. And the first bidding that the municipality of Anchorage had this year for janitorial service, there was 8 or 9 of us there. And the first question that was brought up when the Alaska Railroad put up the bid for janitorial service, which was, I think it was $150,000 for 2 years, first question was asked, what's the catch? What's the requirements for bond? And boss over at the Alaska Railroad said, we realized the trouble in Anchorage or in Alaska for a small contract to get a bond. So we're going without a bond. As long as we can check out your references, and if you're reliable and respectable, you'll get the job, which one company with the lowest bidder did get the job without bonding. And so what is the answer? Now, for me to continue bidding, I'm going to save all my money, get enough money in a kitty to give to some other organization to keep for 18 months or 2 years for me to get that job, like the municipality of Anchorage. I had to pass up a lot of jobs because I didn't have the cash money or a check saying that I have 10% of that bond for that job. I am insured with J.C. Morris, and he said he couldn't help me. So he said, get on the phone and start calling. I started calling, and that's about the fifth call, you get discouraged. One, the last call I made, and said, well, if you have a $100,000 home and you only have a $20,000 contract, we'd be more than happy to help you out. You know, hell, if I had a $100,000 home, I'd be sitting pretty, I'd have the money anyway.
Mr. Smith, with custodial work, you still have to post the delegate bond in order to store the insurance
of
the loss within the building and that sort of thing?
No, the municipality did not require that. They wanted a performance bond saying that if I default on that job, they'll have $28,000. Where in my case, they only wanted 10% of that. So if I default, they have enough money there to hire another crew. And then whatever money is left over, they'll return to me. And they did not, and the Alaskan Railroad didn't require any bond whatsoever. As long as you are licensed in the state of Alaska, the lowest bidder got that job. And if you're licensed, and if you got a specialty license, you got a $2,000 personal bond anyways.
Well,
and the same jobs before that, before the municipality, before the election took place, with no bond. The board didn't require a bond. But the board, which is the municipality of Anchorage now, requires bonds on everything.
And you know, a lot of times, municipal officials or government officials of some sort, probably went a little while ahead, they didn't realize what the effect is on the small contractors. And you better save the money.
After this was brought up, and the man over there, Mr. Iverson, which is a real nice man, he gave me every break he possibly could. He said, Sergeant Warren Smith, he said, you can give me, they pay you by the month. We'll take 25% of your pay for the next 4 months to cover that 10% bond. They were real nice. They were going to go that route for me. Which 25% of the $28,000, I wouldn't get no money at all for 4 months. You know, but he said he had to have it. We talked to him, but he was real nice, and he did everything he could.
And you know, that's the same to me.
There's a lot of dental service build companies in town here, and if you've been in Anchorage any length of time, if you're real big, you have no problem because you look at the money behind you to back you up. But a small man like myself, trying to start out, it's discouraging. And if I didn't have $5,800, I would never get the job. And everyone starting out don't have money like that. Give to the state or to the municipality to keep for 18 months. So that's dead money for 18 months. I think there's a problem, and for me to get bigger and better, I need your help.
Thank you.
My name is
Tom Parr, and I'm the president of ARC Industries. In the pile driving business as a general contractor. I might preface my remarks with observation that I've been in this country since 1940. My parents brought me here. We've lived here all the time since then. Observed a lot of transitional periods, territorial days, statehood, and my father was a carpenter. I've been associated with the contracting industry for almost all my life. Worked primarily at the outset in earthwork and heavy construction. I've been employed by a number of earth moving contractors. I'm an engineer. I'm registered in the state. Graduated from the University of Alaska in Fairbanks, and I took an advanced degree at Stanford. I work for general contractors that contracted with the state of Alaska for road building in positions as superintendent, engineer, and project manager. The relationship, as I view it, has changed quite significantly in recent years. In the early 1960s, there were people representing the owners who, in the heavy earthwork and rockwork industry, are primarily governmental agencies. Either that or in later years here, from 1959 and 60 forward, it's been oil companies. They are the primary source of work for people in earth moving or rockwork or heavy construction. People that represented the owner in the past seem to apply, in best of my recollection, test of reasonableness to what was occurring, regardless of whether it was clearing or grading or materials. There are now handbooks of standards, reference to the specifications, altered by addendum, altered by all kinds of contractual documents. These contractual documents are given to you as a contractor to examine for a short period of time, bid upon the work, assess the risk, tally it, come up with a number at the bottom of the line. I think Mr. Lila struck the most responsive chord, as I view the thing, at this time. When you go to a contract, there is no guarantee that you are going to get paid, either on time or at all. The state, in some cases, is a very good offender, in fact. Municipalities are often worse. Private owners are either good or bad, one of the two. Not much in between. There has been a limiting of authority on the owner's side, generally the state, the Corps, federal people, of the people they have representing them on site. And that is called the project engineer, job engineer, really like. His boss is generally a division head, director of the division, who in turn reports to a commissioner in the case of the state. Their statutory limit is $2,500 as far as any settlement that they can authorize or give credence to on a job. That doesn't allow them any real latitude for reasonableness. To write change orders or to cover areas of risk that were not anticipated in the contract at the outset by either party. The relationship is a contractual relationship, and as I have gone through a number of these things, it has tended to become more employer-employee type of relationship. I think that as the contracts are more refined and more risk is put over to the contractor after people work on these for many years and observe them in action, I'm speaking specifically of road contracts, where at the outset permafrost was something that was negotiable. Now it's something that if you encounter it, it's all at your own risk. So the contracts have become increasingly larger in risk fashion for the contractor. He has not been able to command an increasing amount of money to offset that risk. This leads to litigation. And there is where I think the problem lies, in that litigation, the courts seem to look upon bonding companies, number one, as not bonding, but insuring. And there are many cases that I can think of and have observed that this turned out to be the case. And one that comes to mind very pointedly is the City of Nome versus Nordine. I think there are a number of others. And I think that the people representing the state, writing the contracts, have lots of experience now over the entire state as a whole, recognize what the risks are, and have attained a degree of excellence in writing their contracts that all the risk is on the contractor. And the court decisions reinforce that. Yes, sir. Yes, I think that the risk is higher here. You have difficulties of transportation, as many have testified to here this evening. And you have a broad range of work when you go to an individual job. And it may take more capital equipment or gear, in the case of an earthwork job, than the value of the contract. And I think that this definitely discourages bonding people. Would if I were a bonding person. And I think that the mood of the legal system in Alaska has discouraged bonding people. If I understood Mr. Lytle correctly, he said that the courts tended to look upon a bond as insurance, a penal sum of the bond. Perhaps some relief can be gained by reducing the percentage of performance and payment bonds, specifically for smaller contractors, because as the contract is below $100,000, you have 100% performance and 100% payment requirement for the bonds posted. And then as your bond grows larger, the percentage decreases. And that may not necessarily be good for the specialty contractors and the smaller contractors that perform jobs with less risk. Yes, I am, very definitely. I think that the project head needs a great deal more authority and more flexibility. I think that the statutory requirement of having a change of $2,500 limit on a division head is ridiculous. $2,500 doesn't keep the motor running one day on a major job. And that's no cool. I'd place a $50,000 with the concurrence of the head of the division after thoroughly reviewing it with his resident engineer and the commissioner being in oversight. Not necessarily the commissioner, but maybe three. The other thing that has occurred that is particularly difficult is the workman's compensation situation. I did a job in Cordova in January. I was low bidder at $115,000. Second bidder was $126,000. All bids were rejected because the engineer's estimate was $52,000. It was a repair of the fender system that was damaged by a state ferry. Required a floating rig, crane, jetting gear, etc. A month later, it was replaced on the market to be rebid. I bid it a second time. I bid the same price because it was the same work. There had been 60 feet of piling added and some judgment factor as to the amount of damage. Finally received, you could cut them and save portions and weld them back in. The low bidder was from Seattle. He did $72,000. And the second bidder was a local Alaskan contractor. He did $93,000. I talked to him afterwards and he said he had no work, so he thought he'd bid it. See what he could do with it. That's all well and good. Prior to bidding it, I checked my workman's compensation rate for a tow driving operation operating off of a barge. The rate was $51.43 per $100 of gross payroll, including board, room, and transportation, travel time of the men hired from the plow driver's hall here in Anchorage, do the job, and back again. That's an excessive rate. I don't know of a loss ratio that says that plow drivers, I mean, plow drivers have been lost out of sight or killed. However, if the man says, oh, I slipped on the deck and I hurt my back, the doctor says, I've got to rest for 10 weeks. And the insurance company is faced with a bill that's enormous. Yes, I understand.
and what constitutes, I would be interested in one thing.
What affects a surety's ability to make money in Alaska? Can he do it? Paying premiums? The man fell down on the job the last day of work. This occurred last year when I drove him filing for 2 hour overpass. I talked to my insurance man about it. The man was on comp for 10 weeks. He made more on comp. It was tax-free. He made $1,257 per month tax-free on comp.
Can I ask you something about
$34. Mm-hmm. Several years prior to that, 18. As low as 60, 4 years ago. That's something that's been legislated. I hope that surety bonding doesn't go the same way. Bonding is only the tip of the iceberg, as I view it. There are certainly, as has been testified to, some people that deserve bonds and probably some that don't. And that ought to be a separating process, that's true.